So talking to Jim Kerr of Simple Minds, and here we are at the end of the second decade, more or less, like 1998, and we're into Neapolis. And there is another label change here from, I guess, from Virgin to Chrysalis. So, I mean, how did it feel around about this time making this album, two decades in on Simple Minds?
You know, you get albums that you make that for instance, Eagle Dream, which for many people is a landmark album, and then you ask me to look back on that, I've just this thing of everything we tried just worked. You know, you go out and you try, someone go, I've got a tune they play and just blow your mind, you know, or someone else would walk in and go, I've got one, oh, what's that? Oh, it's Catherine Wheel. That's fantastic. Well, you have this thing, oh, that's called Big Sleep, you know. And then it comes out of the speaker, it sounds amazing. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't as simple as that. In fact, we had problems back then. We're a drummer and we were trying to work things out for days on end in the studio. But for some reason, in general, you get some albums that just work effortlessly. And then we've had one or two that it's the complete opposite. But the time of Neapolis, I mean, it's pretty much Charlie and I trying to keep a band thing because we love bands, you know, and we want to be a band, you know. We're not a Pet Shop Boys, but, and there's nothing wrong with Pet Shop Boys, God forbid, they're great, but we're not the Pet Shop Boys, but there was no getting away. It was me and Charlie in the studio. And by this time, you know, the technology's coming through, the whole Mac thing and the whole Pro Tools and all that stuff. And one hand, it's very exciting. But on the other hand, you know, we don't know what we're doing. we only half know what we're doing. So we made this album called Neapolis that... I think there's some great tunes on that as well, but I have to say, I heard it last year. I was in Italy and it was being played in a hotel lobby, and it sounded like two different albums being played at the same time. it just was, it just, you know, we were out of our depth, and it was really a technology thing.
There is great songs on there. So if you have to pick a song, I mean, from the Neapolis album to play, which one would you go with?
War Babies.
Okay, this is War Babies, Simple Minds.
Yeah. let go, let go. Or will the phantom stay? Let the foreteller be your sign. Feels like something's happening to me. Sunshine like no other. Nothing feels the same. Nothing feels the same.
Tell me about these tremors of play.
War, babe,
feels like something's happening today.
But be done.
Tell me about these tremors of play.
War, babe,
feels like something's happening.
Feels like something's happening. Feels the same. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Nothing feels the same.
Jim, we're into, you know, the next decade of Simple Minds, and we get to around about, you know, the year 2000, and I have to fess up here, is like, this is when I started to get involved with you in more, in a little bit of a working environment. We've been friends for years. I mean, we ended up, I remember this, bringing in, you know, talking to you, we ended up in Scotland recording a record, Our Secrets Are the Same, and there's a bit of a story to this, if you can remember how it all went down and what it meant to you, and moving on. It seemed to be a major change on the way that you were going to work in the future.
Well, as I said, you know, anyone listening to this interview and following it through, you would hear from my tone of the last two or three records that was the 80s, well, late 70s, 80s, had... it had all been on the up. I mean, everything had been on the up. But the 90s sort of polar opposite of that, where things were coming apart and we're having less and less success. And when you do that, you know, I'm not one of the, although I mention them a lot because they're always there, you know, parallel. You're always working with the record companies. I'm not one of these people who blames the record companies or anything. Whatever, it is the way it is. But by that time, I think we were with a record label that was just really seen at the contract. And no matter what we'd done, it wasn't going to get any promotion or something. And that's very hard to deal for anyone getting into a studio or gone from the work. You know, talk about being
demotivated.
I'm not being motivated. But that was in the background. But at the same time, we are who we are, and we wanted to record, and we wanted to give it our best shot. But our mojo had definitely taken a dent. I mean, I don't know if it was missing, but it wasn't. It was a shadow of what it was. And if anything, I think we're always trying to look for a fresh start, a new beginning. So we made this album in Scotland, and as you say, you were involved, Martin, and we made it in, I guess it was my house at the time.
Yeah, it was in the second house out there by, what was that lock? What was the lock that was on?
Lock Lubnig.
Lubnig, that's what it was.
And it's a special record. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's a homemade record, and you can hear that. It wasn't meant to try and, you know, jockey for the top of anyone's charts. But at the same time, you know, I think of songs like Neon Cowboy, I think of songs like Sleeping, I think of songs like Space.
Yeah.
We started working, thanks to you, we started working with Los Angeles-based Kevin Hunter.
Yes.
Who came over and produced or co-produced and co-wrote some of the tracks. It was a great experience. Of course, when we wrapped it up, took it down to London, and no one seemed interested from the record company at the time. And in fact, to say they weren't interested is a real understatement. The record didn't get released. I mean, it eventually did as part of a box set called the Silver Box later on. But that was a kind of defining moment, because at the end of the experience of that, you say, well, we're making records that don't even get released now. Is it time to knock it on the head? And I remember having that conversation with you and a good friend and your partner, Jed Malone.
Yeah.
And I remember how extreme you both were in convincing me that that should not happen. And, you know, I'll be eternally thankful to you both for that. And indeed, so should a lot of people who currently follow Simple Minds or are interested in Simple Minds, because it didn't last long, probably only about a month, but for about a month, the darkness was taken over.
It was, you know, my recollection of it was, you know, Jed and I, it's, you know, Jed Malone, Charlie Butchell, and yourself were all in same class in school, and I was a year younger. I'm not really a year younger, but there's a joke there, but I'll not let you tell it. But about me being held back. But I just remember Jed and I talking and going to meet you, and we were always, you know, just you always kind of trailblazing. And I think what we tried to get back to with this record when we got involved was you started making records again for yourself after that kind of decade dealing with the record company and, you know, and what the big hit does to bands. But I just remember you getting back to make a record that you just felt like doing. I just remember making it in the group of people that were there, from Kevin and also your brother Mark and Eddie Duffy appeared. And it was just a fantastic experience. So off of Our Secrets Are the Same, what tracks should we go with, you?
Go with the opening, go with Shona Wants a Sun, because it's just great.
Razor Dragon Junkie's line, the bottom of the pool is I swim towards the sun. Every day in Mother's Day, and every woman ain't your mum. Sometimes funky isn't fun, and it would be easy to become somebody else. But at this particular point in time, I'll hang on to myself. Yeah. the sun.
Martin Hanlon talking to Jim Kerr from Simple Minds. And we're now moving on to another record, which was a weird one. I remember we were doing Neon Lights, and I'm trying to remember, which is an album of covers. And, you know, that just seemed to be something you want to do from fun that eventually we were just maybe going to release on the web, but actually did come out. Can you remember that period where we did that?
I do, and it was very useful because, you know, as I've been saying there, okay, for a period, you know, I wasn't quite sure where we were going to go, because one of the things about, you're right, making those records, we were making records for ourselves, but at the same time, it was still weird, you know, because you no matter who you are, you know, there's still a context that you're trying to comprehend, and so what was our context, you know, were we this much forgotten thing, were we this thing that was once, you know, of note, of value, and then whatever. But we did decide to let's get this thing going again. And one of the things of getting it going, just to get the creative muscles working, creative in the sense of getting in the studio, and then you got to put everything in context there. You just said something about the whole online thing was starting, and technology was changing, and the way of making records was changing.
Yes.
And we felt it was important before we made a real record to go in and you know, get the rhythm of being together and working again and actually putting stuff down and hearing it coming out of speakers. So the it seemed, if ever there was a chance, ever the time that you wanted to do covers, which, I mean, I know covers get, the jury's out on covers. Some people just don't like the idea of a cover version. So even the name cover version, you know, you kind of cringe when you hear it. But in fact, people like you and I were brought up with not only artists that always did covers, but some fantastic cover albums, pin-ups and these foolish things, and so on and so forth. So for us, it was always something interesting when a band did a cover or something. So anyway, Neon Lights was that, it was done really quickly, done off the hoof, done on the hoof rather, and it got us, it got the engine, it got the key in the engine again, and leading us on, I'm sure you'll pick up on it, Cry, the next album, which we sort of, they really joined each other, that was getting us back to work.
And what track, you know, we're going to play a track from Neon Lights, what track, you know, did you enjoy performing and covering the most on this record? If there is one you can pick, because they were all such great tracks, you know.
Well, we started working with a guy called Gordy Gowdy as well. Gordy Gowdy's one of the faces on the Glasgow scene in Glasgow, which we should mention, because we haven't really mentioned it much beyond saying that we came from there, is that throughout the years, the last 25 years maybe, 30 years, there's been an unending flow of talent coming from Glasgow and great, great Scottish music. And Gordy is one of the sort of the facilitators. He works with other bands.
Yeah.
And he's Mr. Fix-It. And we worked with Gordy on Neon Lights and Cry. And I think there's a song, a Peter Shelley song, who everyone will know from the Buzzcocks, or should know from the Buzzcocks. He did a solo album, and he did a fantastic song called Homo Sapiens that we covered on Neon Lights, and I think it's one of the best cuts.
Stage where we act our lives.
back with Jim Kerr, and we mentioned they're moving into the next album, which was Cry, which we recorded in 2002. An interesting thing about Cry, which I loved, was everybody would look at, you know, the album and say, oh, yeah, Virtual Kerr or the songwriters. And if they looked a little bit closer, what was amazing in this record is your generosity towards your younger brother, who is an amazing talent. And you know, I was very lucky. I've known him more or less all his life. And when I first started playing it, I used him. He came on tour with me with the Silencers first tour and looked after me, you know, because he's a great drummer, much better drummer than I ever was, and a great songwriter. So, I mean, the generosity to bring Mark into this record, and he'd been around for a few records, but in terms of a writer, he appears on this. And we also remember you got to work with Vince Clarke in this. I mean, how did it feel bringing your brother into to the band setup?
Well, here's the thing, you know, you rather generously say that Mark's a better drummer than you. He's a better singer than me. He's a better guitar player than both of us, yeah. You know. So who else do we know that can play the guitar, can play drums, can sing, can write? He really is a talent. But it actually wasn't me who brought him in at the Simple Minds thing. It was Charlie Burchill, who he loved Mark's enthusiasm and had got Mark over to Dublin, where Charlie was living at the time, and they got on really well in terms of writing a few things and inspiring each other. So it was more Mark, it was more Charlie that brought Mark into the picture on that record to bring something extra. Because I always think, I mean, okay, Simple Minds, where we started as, you know, very much a traditional band, where you get the founder members and like all traditional bands and people who follow, you know, traditional bands, we you never want that lineup to change, you know, you never do, but, you know,
yeah,
stuff happens and inevitably members come and go and stuff, and people would say, well, some strength goes missing when the original lineup breaks, and there's something to be said for that.
Of course, yeah.
And there's something to be said for bands that stay together forever, and they, you know, they're like Mount Rushmore, they've just stuck together. However, I think that can maybe be a challenge as well, especially when you get 8, 9, 10, 11 albums down the line, no matter who it is. I think having to work with the same people and having to, you know, because, you know, none of us are that brilliant. You know, you're looking for someone to go in with a completely new feel. Your drummer's only got that feel or whatever. I guess what I'm trying to say, in our case, as we get on with each album, we've worked with different people and we've augmented our thing. It's not like we've not got a thing of we've gone and worked with these, you know, superstar songwriters or sat in or tried to get someone to come up with a vision for us or anything. We've incorporated people in, and it's great, you know, because they bring new energy and they bring additional things, and again, as we've benefited so much for the various additional people who we'll work with through the year, and Mark Kerr, my brother, who you mentioned, is definitely one of them.
So if we're going for a track off of Cry, what should we play? Should we play a Mark Kerr song or a
Why not? You could play Facing the Sun.
So this is Simple Minds doing a song called Facing the Sun, written by very talented and much younger than us, Mark Kerr.
It's okay to be lonely. It's okay still waiting for. Well, it's okay to feel you're the only, like a loaded gun just bound to explode. Just like the story goes, if you've been raised to believe in your soul, I'm sure you'll find your faith facing the sun, facing the sun. Well, it's okay to be in love with the way the sun shines above your face. Well, it's okay if you've had enough of this. A lack of light, being around for days inside.
History of Simple Minds, which brings us now to 2005, and what I'd say that, you know, coming back from the start of the decade into the album with this, where you were back, you know, up and running and really happening in terms of live shows, in terms of writing and recording, and it's Black and White 050505, and there's some great songs on here, which I'm a bit biased about. I was involved a bit in this record, but I just thought the band were really happening now. I mean, and what's your take on Black and White, Jim?
Well, going back to what I was saying there about, you know, the various people who we worked with, and I mentioned all these producers in the past, I mentioned people, names that people would have heard of. However, one of the key components of the band's, I think, sort of resurrection in a way, in the last 10 years, thanks to you, had been the involvement of producer Jess Code, who worked with us on the album that you mentioned and indeed the follow-up, Graffiti Soul, which I'm sure we'll be discussing very soon. Jess Code, not only did he bring his inventiveness and his energy and his amazing intelligence, but he got us into shape again. I mean, he really got us into shape. We worked much harder in advance on the writing. He brought Charlie and I together. And songs, you know, Charlie and stuff that was always in Charlie's Charlie's demos always sound great. And some of them sound like great songs off the bat. Others don't sound like great songs. They sound like great things.
Yeah.
And how are you going to make them into great, great songs? And then following on from that, how are you going to make them into a great record? Well, you know, Jess Code has been a huge, huge factor in the album that you spoke about, and indeed a huge factor in the fact that I confidently say that, you know, Simple Minds sit just now in a position of which is greatly nourished and you know, really got a mojo back. But it started getting real again. We're getting real creatively anyway. We're making stuff and making fully fledged albums again, produced with Jess, mixed in LA with Bob Clearman, yeah, bringing his amazing talent. I mean, it's starting to sound like the real deal again.
I remember a little story on that is we were doing the Silverbox set and you had asked me to speak to all the producers you'd worked with, and I put a call in to talk to Clear Mountain about Once Upon a Time, and we were working in black and white, and I said, look, we're doing something for the Silverbox set, would you like to make a comment and work with Simple Minds? And he's like, it was just the most amazing experience for me, that, you know, Charlie and Jim are amazing, I loved everybody in the band and it was great. And he said to me, so what are they doing now? And I said, we're just making this new record. And he said, who's mixing it? And I just thought off the cuff, hey, we were thinking maybe of asking you, you know. And he just was instantly was like, I would love to do it. Doesn't matter what the budget is, I'd love to work with these guys again. I mean, and that says a lot about you and Charlie, of course, the way that he's worked with people. I think he did a great job as well, Clean Mountain. I thought, you know, he's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy. I mean, Bob is very, very particular. He's definitely in he's a studio head. You know, he much more relates, I think, to he's more human than when I first met him. But he's more human,
yeah,
than I thought when I first met him. He's an amazing, you know, in the history of music, the history of music from the late 70s up until now. I mean, Clear Mountain is the mixer. I mean, I've talked to some musicians and they'll say, what's it like to work with Clear Mountain? Or what's it like to have Clear Mountain mix your record? And I mean, I guess, I don't know, I don't really know American sports, but I remember reading this thing about the famous basketball player Larry Bird, where I think he was going to spot a commercial or something for Pepsi or something, and you know, it was a bit of a joke thing. He had to miss the whatever you call it, the shot.
Yeah.
And it took Larry Bird about 25 goes before he could miss.
Right.
Because he's so, well, Clear Mountain's the same. I mean, he just gets it.
Well, there's another thank you I've got to say for that. Another aside to this story that I don't even think you're aware of, where when you were recording that record, Clear Mountain got a call, and it was Springsteen, and they needed a day in the studio, and yous were moving along nicely, and yous let them, you know, have the day in the studio. And what transpired about 2 years later, I went to see Springsteen in the Royal Albert Hall on his solo record, and I went with a friend, a lawyer from New York, and he knew the manager. We went backstage afterwards, and there was not really anyone there. And he went to talk to Springsteen, and the manager says, no, he wants you to come along as well. So I went to the dressing room in the Royal Albert Hall, where we had just been previously. I remember we played that Simple Minds show there, and it was incredible. And I walk in the dressing room, and Springsteen's there, and he says, are you Martin? I says, yeah. And he says, I just want to say thank you for letting me have the studio time, and could you please give a big thanks to Jim and Charlie as well? And I thought, that just kind of sums up those guys. It was
so
generous.
They're just very real. And I have to say, you know, it's a generalized thing and stuff, but any time we've worked in America, worked for the engineers, worked for the techs, worked for the bands, people are just great, you know, they're real. It's still something to be a musician.
Yeah.
There's something about it. And God, do we feel lucky to have, you know, touched on some of that.
Can you pick a track from Black and White that you'd like to play?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm tempted to go with one of the upbeat ones, but there's a really beautiful track. We're talking there about, you know, Charlie Birchall sometimes coming up with these things, and they already sound amazing, but maybe within the arrangement of the demo or something, you think, yeah, it sounds amazing, but how's it ever going to be a song? It's a theme.
Yeah.
But I think we managed to pull it off. Song like Dolphins.
Thank you. this wise? What you miss, and you need to uncertain, and all things look around, and all things so the world just ends. Those dolphins drag me down. Drag me down.
The last studio albums you've released, which was in 2009, a great record called Graffiti Soul, which was amazing to see back in the UK charts, and also great live shows as well back in the arenas, and just being what you know, at the top of your game again. I mean, I love this record, and I was so pleased to get to work on it as well. And how does it feel being where you are? I mean, let's talk about, you know, that moving into where you are now and how that's helped in terms of the live show, because you just play live all the time.
I mean, you know, it that album as well, you know, I'm thinking just now, and the, you know, they really did follow on from each other. Sometimes when you get two albums that are close to each other, you think, oh, more of the same.
Yeah,
and then as others, you think, no, it just demands to be sort of connected, if not more of the same. But it was just, you know, I think as we'd said, I think it really, you know, established. It was validation that maybe at the start of a decade, where, you know, the daylight's gone very, very dim, thinking this could maybe end, to deciding, no, we're not going to let it end, but can we get the heartbeat going, you know, because it's kind of flatlining. Can we get the heartbeat going? And then it was like, okay, we've got the heartbeat going with one or two records, but how far can we take it again? And, I mean, of course, we're not talking about being top of the Billboard charts or top of this or top of that, but seeing the band or witnessing the band make fully fledged records again, records that both hardcore fans and mainstream, when they got the chance to hear it, were saying, this is great, was so pleasurable. And then seeing the band, it was great to be out in those big rooms again. But even more than that, it was just great to see the band still progress. And there's, you know, to be 30 years down the line, actually 35 years down the line now, and to walk on stage, or sometimes at the end of the night go, you know what, we've made progress.
Yeah.
We weren't as good as this last year. And that's such a great thing, you know, because it you know, we've had an amazing career. It's we couldn't ask for more than what we've had, but as I've hopefully illustrated within our conversation here, it's not all been one-way traffic. You know, there's been ups and downs and moments where we felt we were welcome everywhere. There's been moments where we felt we were welcome nowhere. There's been moments where we felt we were world beaters. There was moments where we felt clueless. But I don't think at any point did we ever feel that we were only born to do this, or that there was anything more worthwhile being born to do. and that kind of faith and all that seen us through, and indeed still does. Last night, about this time, after I finish talking to you, I'll begin out my sort of end of the day walk, and I put on my headphones and I listen to stuff, and I listen to whatever it is, demos or maybe even things that you and I worked on 8 years ago, nine years ago, still seeds of songs that never made the cut, but we were there in the room that day, and we went, there's something great about this, you know, and it'll have to happen and stuff. I still have that enthusiasm and still a determination to get there.
Okay, well, go play a track off of Graffiti Soul, you know. And there's so many here that I would like to play, but I'll let you pick, if you don't mind.
Well, here's one, because this is where you played a real big part again. I mentioned Jez Coder, who you introduced to the band, but he also introduced a writer called Sean Kelly. And right. 10 years before we recorded it, you played me a demo of a song called Light Travels. And I was determined that if Sean wasn't going to do anything with it, that we would. And we went around the houses with this. You know, we tried it different ways. And the problem was it always sounded good. But it never, we never quite felt we got it until near the end of the Graffiti Soul sessions. And I just heard that again the other day after not hearing it for about 4 years. That blew me away.
And now, Jim, we're going to move into it's an interesting one because we never really mentioned when we talked about Graffiti Soul, where I remember being in the studio and you had this setup where in the morning at breakfast someone was allowed to pick a cover version. And then you would go and learn it, and then you would go into the studio and you'd cut this before you started working on the songs for Graffiti Soul. And you actually called, you know, this bonus disc, Searching for the Lost Boys, which leads into your first solo album, which came in 2010, which was a great pleasure to be involved with, and it was called Lost Boy, a.k.a. Jim Kerr. Getting to do a solo record, I mean, was there a freedom, or were you worried about it? I mean, how did it feel, and how did it go for you?
No, the thing is, because they're only solo records and names, in the sense that, you know, you still work with teams of people, and you still work with a team of people, if not a band. Certainly when you take it on the road, it's a band. So, in that sense, and it's still a collaboration, you know, collaborating with Jess, collaborating with you, collaborating with great people who, you also introduced me, Paul Statham, and Owen Parker, and all of these people. So, yeah, it's your thing in the sense, it's kind of weird because where it's weird is I would do things and I would say, no, I can't do that. Why? Because it's too simple minds. And therefore, what's the point? And that's quite true. Yeah. You know, what is the point of you know, stepping out from your normal day job and then just doing the same thing again? But sometimes you come up with a something you love and you go, yeah, but that's me. So there was a bit of dancing around with that. But I think more the point was, quite often when I hear about people in bands doing solo projects, they will say, yeah, well, I always wanted to do it. I was a bit frustrated about this, or I was a bit frustrated about that, and here was a chance for me to call my own shots and all that stuff. I didn't feel anything of that at all. Simply what it was with me was that I remember the day that Graffiti Soul ended for me in terms of all my parts were done. Maybe in the past when that's done, what do? You go on holiday for a month or whatever, or you then gradually think about what's next. I just wanted to go and write and record the very next day. I didn't want to get off the wheel. I didn't want to sit down. I didn't want to disappear. I thought what we'd done was so good. I felt that, you know, in the old days we used to talk about this, you know, the creative muse, and, you know, some days it was a good way of explaining why some days you could write three songs in a day and then you couldn't do anything for 6 months and you say, well, the muse isn't working. Well, I think that's a load of baloney. I think in the last 10 years what I realised, that it's a sort of, whatever this creative thing is, it's kind of more like a muscle, in the sense I've found that if you, the more you use it, the easier it is to tap into. And you know, the idea of sitting down and starting from point A or a blank page, which used to terrify, is just such a pleasure. Let's create. Let's do it. It's just fun. And basically, that was it. I it looked like Simple Minds weren't going to do anything after Graffiti Soul for a while, and I thought, well, I don't want to stop. Yeah. So, in a sense, let me initiate this thing called Lost Boy, and indeed, as you say, we did the first album, and which you executive produced, and it's something I will return to as soon as Simple Minds look like they're going to go on hiatus or be stepping back, and so it's something that I look forward to probably next year again.
So if there's a track on there that you would go with, what would you go with?
Gotta go with The Weight, because it's very special.
Thank you.
This is Martin Hanlon, KX93.5, with Jim Kerr from Simple Minds. And just going to ask you, Jim, to round us off, is where are we with the Great Stitch? You say there's two new tracks on there. Do you know when they'll be coming out and when we can hear them?
I don't have a date just now, but I know it's sometime in March. And I think people will be really interested in hearing the two new tracks. You were around us a couple of years ago when we were working on what's going to be the radio track, a track called Broken Glass Park. And in fact, Lost Boy played it live, and it was one of those tracks. You'll be able to validate this, that people had never heard it, and yet by the end of the song, they were singing along with the chorus, which is such a rare thing. But the two new tracks on the Greatest Hits album, and the Greatest Hits album is called Celebration. The two new tracks are called Blood Diamonds and Broken Glass Park, and there's a real strong hint within these tracks as to what the next Simple Minds album will sound like. And indeed, it's kind of attached, I think, to those early electro art rock days.
We'd settle down till night fades into dawn. Do you remember me? Was the last day of the last great century. We were so young, in my memory. In Broken Glass Park, we'd hide from the sun. Stay out all night till the morning would come. Discover ourselves, stay there for days. Broken glass park, so many ways.
Martin Hanlon here on KX935, and I hate to say we're getting to the end of this conversation, but it's been amazing. I want to say thank you, and I'm going to ask the question that everybody over here wants me to ask is, what are you doing now, and is there a possibility of an American tour?
What we're doing here, as I said at the start of our interview, that, you know, we'd had a break there and gone back to work, and certainly are next week. Back in the studio, in Peter Gabriel's studio in Bath, actually, working with a producer called Steve Osborne. Charlie's done some stuff with him, and I'm going over to put down some vocals. I'd say we're about two-thirds through a new album, which will, if luck's on our side, will come at the end of this year, more probably next year, but certainly we're moving on. In the meantime, we have a greatest hits. Now, I know we haven't had one of them for about 12 years, and there's young kids and there's people coming to see us. You need something to focus the story. There's two new tracks on that. It's coming on in March. Two brand new tracks, Broken Glass Park and Blood Diamonds, which are really sounding great, and probably give a hint as to what the new Simple Minds album, when it comes, will sound like. In between that, we're about to do our most extensive tour of the UK since 1979. It's about 34 dates UK and Ireland, which will take us to a summer again, where we will look to go back and record. The second part of your question, I can tell you that just last week, Ian Grenfell, who manages, had come on, and there is conversations. I mean, it's came very close in the last 2 or 3 years, but there's yet again conversations about getting the band out there to states to play in either late summer or fall. And I mean, some of the initiative is coming from those shows that we did with Devo in Australia that had gone down so well. I'm pretty convinced that, you know, to go out there and play is one thing, but, you know, we need a bill, because well, the effort involved, you know, you want to play with as many people as possible. And that's easier said than done, but maybe, you know, maybe we've finally got it. And I tell you, if we have, then there'll be no one more pleased than me.
Oh, I mean, every time I ever mention that I'm in the music business, I'm in Glasgow, the very next question is, do you know the Simple Minds? That just happens here on a daily basis. And everybody would love you to be over here, and I think it would be incredible for you. And also, you tour so much, and you know, in America, you haven't been here for a while, and this would be a great, you know.
Yeah, we would love to show the band in great form again. We'd love to get the chance to show people, and we'd just love to be in America, but we'd love to get a chance to show people the band, and we're in great, great form. And the people who like us there, you know, they deserve to see us, and maybe this is the time.
Well, I hope this show, you know, lets people in America know the full history of the band and how amazing you are as writers and of great music and live performers. And I was trying to figure out what song we'll finish with, and it just came to me as we were talking, and I think, you know, just for the whole power of who yous are and what yous are about, I think I'm going to have to finish this off with Waterfront, if that's okay with you.
Great.
And
great.
Just a huge big thanks for your time, and I know you're down in Nice and it's kind of late. It's still very early here in Laguna Beach, but thank you very much, Jim, and it's been a pleasure, and always has been.
The absolute least I can do. I mean, I think quite a lot of people in the Simple Minds community that hopefully when you promote this will get a chance to hear it. They already know the part that you played in Simple Minds, especially over the last 10 years and more. I mean, we've been so lucky to have some great champions of our cause through the years, but not many more so than yourself. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr, and this is Simple Minds and Waterfront.
today.